He didn't know how far it was to their destination, or how long it took to get there. But finally the wagon came to a halt.
We're here. This is our farm.
Luke felt the wagon shift as the old man got down from the seat. A moment later, Luke felt himself moving. He knew the old-timer had taken hold of his feet to drag him out of the wagon, even though he couldn't feel the grip. The rain had tapered off to a drizzle. It was late in the afternoon, and darkness was coming on quickly, earlier than usual because of the overcast sky. As they lifted him from the wagon, Luke saw a rectangle of yellow light and recognized it as an open doorway. The glow from a lantern spilled out from the room beyond the door. Emily and her grandfather took him inside.
We better get him out of these wet duds or he'll catch the grip for sure. He don't need that on top of everything else. I ought to take a look at that bullet hole in his back, too.
You think you can help him, Grandpa?
You want me to, don't you?
Oh, yeah, if you can.
One thing I got to know first. Are the Yankees going to come looking for you, mister? Is helping you going to get me and my granddaughter killed?
The Yankees don't know I exist.
All right. I hope you're telling the truth. I'll hold them up, gal. Get a knife and cut them clothes off of them. That'll be the easiest way to do it.
Luke was in too much pain to worry about the girl seeing him naked. Anyway, he'd seen her wearing nothing but that soaked woolen shirt, so he supposed turnabout was fair play, as the old saying went. His clothes fell away from him. A chill went through him, and he started to shiver.
Oh, get something and dry him off, then we'll put him in my bunk.
Luke felt her drying his torso. When she moved around behind him, he figured she had spotted the wound low down on his back.
It don't look too good, Grandpa.
I wouldn't expect it to. Come on, we need to get him warmed up, Sal.
Emily finished drying him and they carried him over to a bunk. They lowered him face first onto it. Even with nothing but a rough blanket covering it, it felt wonderful. He let his face sink into the softness. His head jerked up a second later as something prodded into the wound in his back. His lips drew back from his teeth in a pained grimace.
Looks like the bullet's still in there. It'll have to come out, but not now. The hole's already festering too much. Fetch me that jug of corn.
You don't need to get drunk, Grandpa.
I ain't planning to drink it. It'll clean that wound out better than anything else we got.
After hearing that, Luke knew what to expect. A moment later, the liquid fire of the corn liquor burned into his back. Something poked into the wound again. Probably the old man's fingers, he guessed.
I can feel the bullet. Should be able to get it out. But not yet. I'll dig it out in a day or two, if he's still alive.
He'll be alive. I'm gonna see to that.
Why do you care so much whether this varmint lives or dies? You don't even know him.
I know his name. That's enough for now.
The pain eased a little, and Luke let out the breath he'd been holding. As the air escaped him, his eyes closed. Exhaustion caught up to him, crashing down like a hammer. And once again, he knew nothing but darkness. When he woke up the next time, the only light in the room came from a small candle burned down to almost nothing. The dim glow was enough to reveal Emily sitting in an old rocking chair next to the bunk, dozing. Now that Luke got a better look at her, he saw that his initial impression had been right. She was beautiful. Her face showed lines that sorrow and hard work had put in it already, even though she was only around 20 years old. But that didn't detract from her beauty as far as he was concerned. Her thick, dark hair was plaited into a single braid hanging over her left shoulder as she sat in the rocking chair. She had put on a clean shirt and a clean pair of overalls, maybe the only clothes she owned besides the one she'd been wearing earlier. Luke looked over to see a long, bulky, blanket-wrapped shape in the bunk on the other side of the room. He recalled the bunk in which he lay belonged to Emily's grandfather, which meant the old-timer had claimed Emily's bunk while she slept in the chair. Or maybe she had insisted on sitting up with him, he thought. That was certainly possible. The pain in his back had receded to a dull throbbing. He felt it with every beat of his heart, but was able to ignore it by focusing his attention on Emily. Growing aware of his gaze somehow, her eyes opened, the initial flutter of eyelids as delicate as that of a butterfly's wings. She scooted forward in the rocker and leaned toward him.
You're awake. How do you feel?
Before Luke could say anything, she shook her head.
You don't have to answer that. I'm sure you hurt like hell.
I do.
And why are you smiling?
Because I don't think I've ever run across a young woman who talks like you do.
She looked surprised, and Luke saw a pink tinge spreading slowly through her lightly olive skin. She was blushing, he realized.
You mean the cousin? I started doing it for a reason. After we got word that my pa and my brothers wouldn't be coming back from the war, I worried that Grandpa would miss not having any other men folks around. And since one of the things men seem to do a lot is cuss, I figured it might make Grandpa feel better if I was to do it. They all tried to watch their language around me while I was growing up, what with me being the only gal on the place. But I heard enough. I can cuss up a storm when I want to.
How did that turn out for you?
To be honest, it spooked the hell out of Grandpa at first. But once he got used to it, I think he sort of likes it. And I got used to it too, I reckon. So I don't hardly know I'm doing it anymore. Sometimes when you're really mad or frustrated, it sure feels good to let loose with a few rip snorters.
Yes, I can imagine.
Emily put a hand to her mouth and looked embarrassed again.
As bad as you must hurt, you must really feel like cussing. You go right ahead if you want to, Mr. Jensen. It won't bother me none.
Oh, that's all right. What I'd really like is for you to call me Luke.
I reckon I can do that. I've always been taught to be careful around fellows who were slick talkers, because my pa said there was only one thing they wanted. But I guess the shape you're in, I don't have to worry about that, do I?
Not hardly. And even if I wasn't hurt, my pa brought me up to be a gentleman.
I can see that in your eyes.
She reached forward and lightly rested her hand on his forehead.
Oh, my Lord! You're burning up with fever!
Luke wasn't surprised. He had already known he felt chilled and lightheaded. He supposed the wound in his back had festered and blood poisoning had set in, just like Emily's grandfather had predicted.
I'll wake Grandpa and see if there's anything he can do for you.
There's no need. Just get a wet cloth, wipe my face with it. That's about all anyone can do for me.
There's gotta be something else.
There's not. It's pretty much out of our hands now.
He knew that was true. If the fever broke, he might have a chance. If it didn't, he would die. Simple as that. Emily got up for a moment and came back with a wet rag. She leaned down and swabbed it over his face. The cool touch felt wonderful. Sometime while she was doing that, he passed out again. When he woke up, bright sunlight was slanting in through the cabin's open door.
You ain't dead after all.
Emily's grandfather had taken her place in the rocking chair beside the bunk.
I could use something to drink.
Yeah, you're pretty well wrung out, I expect. I'll fetch you a cup.
The old man came back with a dented tin cup. Luke took a sip of the clear liquid in it and promptly spit it out in an instinctive reaction.
That's a waste of good corn, son. See if you can keep some of it down this time. You're gonna need it.
What do you mean by that?
I mean your fever may have broken for now, but that wound in your back's in bad shape. That Yankee bullet's got to come out if you're gonna have any chance of making it.
Two things were wrong with that, Luke thought. It wasn't a Yankee bullet that had laid him low, but rather one fired by a renegade Confederate. And he wasn't sure he wanted to have a chance of making it, not in the condition he was in. But the hatred of giving up was bred deeply within him.
All right, give me another sip of that shine.
Emily said you was from up in the Missouri Ozarks. I reckon you probably know good corn liquor when you taste it.
He held the cup to Luke's lips. Carefully, Luke sipped the fiery stuff. His stomach rebelled against it, but he managed to keep it down. He drank enough that it affected him immediately and set his head to spinning.
You're gonna cut the bullet out of me, aren't you?
That's the only thing to do. As soon as Emily gets back from the trading post to hold you down, we'll get started.
Go ahead and do it now. I can stay still.
You don't know what you're saying. Even with that lick in you, it's gonna hurt worse than anything you ever felt before.
Look, Emily doesn't weigh enough to hold me down if I start bucking around. I'm gonna have to control it. whether she's here or not.
The old man rubbed his jaw as he frowned in thought. His fingertips rasped on the white stubble.
More than likely you're right about that. Might not make much difference whether the gal's here or not.
I don't want her to have to see it. Give me a leather strap or something to bat on.
My razor strap will do.
And maybe some more of that moonshine first.
We can sure do that.
A few minutes later, after several more swallows of the potent liquor, Luke's head was spinning even faster. He set his teeth in the leather strap and watched as the old man heated the long blade of a hunting knife in the fireplace until it glowed cherry red. He carried the knife quickly back over to the bunk.
The wound's scabbed over, but I'll have to open it again so all the pus can get out. You ready?
Uh-huh.
He closed his eyes. The old man was right about one thing. It hurt worse than anything Luke had ever experienced. His teeth bore down on the leather, and every muscle in his body turned tight and hard as an iron strap. Every muscle he could still feel, anyway. The mingled stink of burned flesh and corruption filled the room.
I got it.
Some of the terrible pressure Luke had felt in his back was released. The pain didn't slack off much, but any relief at all was a blessing. He felt the old man wiping at his back with a rag.
You're bleeding like a stuck pig, boy, but I reckon that's a good thing. Maybe it'll wash out all the festering, if you don't bleed to death first, that is.
The pain continued to recede. Luke's head slumped back to the bunk, and the leather strap slipped out of his mouth as his teeth released their grip on it. His pulse pounded inside his skull.
Grandpa, what in hell are you doing? My God, there's blood all over the place. You've killed him.
Take it easy, gal. He's alive, and I got that bullet out of his back.
Is that why you sent me to the trading post? So you could start cutting on him without me being here to stop you?
Oh, shoot. I didn't even know he was going to wake up. His fever broke, but it would have come right back if I didn't get that bullet out. Look here. That's healthy blood coming out of him now. We can go ahead and stop it, and he can start getting his strength back.
Emily went closer to the bunk and bent down to peer at Luke's face. He saw her only vaguely through his pain and weariness.
You mean he's gonna be all right?
I mean he's got a chance now.
But the biggest question, Luke thought, just as he slipped back into unconsciousness, wasn't whether he would live or not. The question was whether his legs would work, or whether he was going to be a cripple for the rest of his life, however long that was. The fever didn't come back. When Luke woke again, he was ravenously hungry, but able to eat only a few bites of the stew Emily fed him before it started to sicken him. He kept it down, though. From talking to Emily, he found out that it wasn't the day after she'd rescued him from the riverbank. As a matter of fact, 3 days had passed since that stormy afternoon.
You were burning up with fever and out of your head most of that time. You kept raving, but I couldn't make much sense out of most of it.
What did I say? Did I talk about anybody in particular?
Oh, your ma and pa, of course. I'd expect that. And somebody named Kirby?
My little brother.
And Janie.
My sister.
And Potter.
He's not part of my family.
I hope not, the way you were talking about him. Remember how I said I could cuss pretty good? Well, you had me beat all hollow while you were talking about that fella Potter.
He's the man who shot me. He and his friends are deserters and renegades.
Well then, you've got good reason to be cussing him. I figured somebody must have waylaid you and robbed you when I didn't find no horse anywhere thereabouts.
Did I talk about anything else?
Not really. There were some other names. Rennie, something like that?
Remy. A good friend.
And Dale and Edgar, who are they?
More friends.
Luke didn't offer any further explanation. Their bodies must have been taken by the river before Emily found him. Otherwise, she would have asked him before now who those dead men were. Just as well, he thought. He didn't want to tell her about the gold, about the way he had lost it and gotten his friends killed. That was a burden he was going to bear alone.
Grandpa says it looks like that bullet hole in your back is healing up better now. I was sure upset with him when I came in and found that he'd been cutting on you. But I reckon he did the right thing.
What's your grandfather's name?
Linus Peabody.
A fine name. I'm in his debt, and yours.
You don't owe me nothing.
You saved my life. I would have died out there if it wasn't for you.
It's my Christian duty to help folks in need.
I wish more people felt like you about that. If they did, we might not have had this war.
Grandpa says we didn't need to have it anyway. We never had no slaves and didn't want any. He tried to talk my pa and my brothers into not going off and fighting, but they said it was their duty because the Yankees had no right to invade us.
They were right about that. I just wish it had never come to that point.
Wishing don't do folks a lot of good, Mr. Jensen. I mean, Luke. If it did, there's a whole heap of things in the world that'd be different.
She was certainly right about that, Luke thought. Because if wishing did any good, his legs would work again. And so far, they didn't. It really hadn't been very long yet since his injury, he reminded himself several times that day. And the next, and the next, and the day after that. By the time a week had passed, Luke's appetite had returned, and so had some of his strength. He was able to sit up in the rocking chair with a pillow to cushion his wounded back, as long as Peabody and Emily helped him get there from the bunk. But he still had no feeling in his legs, and when he sat there and stared at them and willed them to move, nothing happened. The legs remained limp and lifeless.
I wish I could help you with the chores. You folks saved my life. You're feeding me, and I can't do a blasted thing to repay you.
Nobody's asking you to repay nothing.
I know that, but I want to anyway.
Maybe the time will come that you can. You can't never tell.
Another couple of days passed. Luke continued to get stronger. Peabody built him a bunk of his own so he and Emily could return to their own beds. He checked the wound in Luke's back and changed the dressing on it.
Looks like that hole's just about healed up, son. Got to admit, I didn't think it had happened that way, but you must be darn near as strong as a mule, and stubborn as one, too.
Grandpa!
My pa used to say the same thing about me. The stubborn part, anyway. But the real reason I'm not dead is because you and Emily took such good care of me, Mr. Peabody.
The gal wouldn't have it no other way.
Peabody went out to work in the fields, leaving Emily to finish cleaning up after breakfast before she joined him. With just the two of them to take care of the place, they both worked from dawn to dusk most days. They'd gotten behind on the chores during the time they'd had to take turns looking after Luke, and knowing that added to his feeling he owed them more than he could ever repay. A short time after leaving, Peabody hurried back into the cabin.
Yankees coming.
Oh, dear Lord, how many?
Just a dozen or so, but that's plenty if they're looking for trouble. You sure they ain't hunting you?
I don't see how they could be.
The old single-shot rifle Peabody used for hunting game hung on hooks attached to the wall. He took it down and checked its load.
You don't want to start trouble. Not if there are a dozen of them.
Don't plan on starting it. But if they force me to it, I'll fight.
How close are they?
About a quarter mile, I'd say.
Put the rocker on the porch and help me into it. I'll hold the rifle in my lap under a blanket.
They'd be able to see it anyway. I have a better idea.
She opened a cabinet and took out the Griswold and Gunnison revolver Luke had brought with him from Richmond. He didn't know what had happened to his rifle, but the sight of the revolver lifted his spirits a little. Only for a moment, though. He recalled how wet the gun had gotten.
The charges in that are bound to be ruined.
They were until I cleaned it up and reloaded it.
Where'd you get ammunition for that gun?
Bought it at the trading post the other day. I thought we might need it sometime.
Luke hoped that time hadn't come. Even with the revolver, he wouldn't be any match for a dozen Yankee cavalrymen, especially stuck in a rocking chair with useless legs. But being armed was always better than being defenseless, so he held out his hand for the gun and slipped it into the pocket of the overalls he was wearing. It was a good thing Linus Peabody was a fairly big man. His clothes fit Luke without being too tight. Peabody dragged the rocking chair onto the cabin's front porch. Then he and Emily helped Luke get seated in it. She hurried back into the cabin to grab the blanket from the bunk, which she draped over the lower half of Luke's body. It was the first time he'd been outside since the day of the storm. The air was warm and smelled good. It was a beautiful spring day. At least it would have been if it hadn't been marred by the sight of those Yankee troopers riding toward the cabin. Peabody came out onto the porch holding the rifle.
Get back inside, girl, and don't come out no matter what happens.
You know damn good and well I ain't gonna do that, Grandpa.
Blast it, for once in your life, do what I tell you.
I'll be right inside.
Luke put his right hand under the blanket, slipping the revolver out of his pocket and gripping it tightly as he watched the Yankees ride closer. He had to fight down the impulse to yank out the gun and start blazing away at the enemy. Or are they the enemy anymore? They were talking among themselves as they approached the cabin. They certainly didn't seem to be looking for trouble. The officer in charge of the patrol, a lieutenant, judging by his insignia, came up to the cabin with the others and reined in. With a friendly nod, he touched a finger to the brim of his hat.
Good morning, gentlemen. Does one of you own this farm?
I do.
Then I'd like to ask your permission to water our horses.
Peabody took one hand off the rifle and jerked a thumb toward the north.
River's about half a mile that way. Plenty of water there.
Oh, I wasn't aware of that. I'm not that familiar with the area. We're obliged to you for the information. We'll just water our horses at the river.
That's a good idea.
Sir, you have heard the news, haven't you?
What news?
The war's over, sir. General Lee offered his surrender to General Grant nearly 3 weeks ago at a place up in Virginia called Appomattox Courthouse. The fighting is all over. There's no need for you and your son to worry, sir. We're all countrymen again.
The river's up yonder.
We'll be going then. Good day to both of you, and thank you again.
The cavalrymen rode around the cabin and headed north. Luke listened to the sound of their hoofbeats fading as Emily came out of the cabin.
I'm sorry, Luke.
About the war being over? Don't be. I'm not. I knew that was how it was going to turn out. Better to have it end before more good men were killed for no reason.
Amen to that.
Luke took the revolver from under the blanket and handed it to Emily.
I guess you can put that away again.
All right. Luke, what are you going to do now?
He looked up at her and realized he had no idea. Luke balanced himself on the crutches, reached into the bag he held, and slung grain onto the ground for the chickens clustering around him. The fowl went after the stuff with their usual frenzied enthusiasm. He draped the bag strap over his shoulder, got a good grip on the crutch handle so he could turn himself around, and stumped back toward the cabin. Emily came out onto the porch before he got there.
I was gonna feed the chickens.
No need. I took care of it.
There's just no stopping you, is there?
Not when it's something I can do.
He changed course, angling toward the side of the house where the big stump they used for splitting firewood stood. The axe leaned against the stump, handle up.
What are you fixing to do now?
You said you needed some wood for the stove.
I didn't say you had to split it.
I don't mind.
He reached the stump and propped the right-hand crutch against it. With only a small amount of awkwardness, he picked up a piece of wood from the pile beside the stump and set it upright in the middle. Then he took hold of the axe and lifted it one-handed.
You're gonna miss and cut your leg off one of these days.
No great loss.
Unless you bleed to death.
Luke swung the axe above his head and brought it down in a precise stroke, splitting the cordwood perfectly down the middle. He used the axe to brush the two pieces off the stump, leaned the axe against it, and picked up another piece of wood to split.
Oh, you are the most stubborn man I ever saw, Luke Jensen.
The late summer sun blazed down, and it didn't take long to work up a sweat. His damp linsey woolsey shirt clung to his back. He lifted his arm and sleeved beads of perspiration off his face. When he'd first started shaving himself again, rather than relying on Emily to do it, he'd been shocked at the gaunt, haggard face looking out at him from the mirror. That man looked at least 10 years older than he really was, Luke thought. Since then, his features had begun to fill out some, and he thought he looked more like himself. Most of the time, the strain of what he had gone through painted a rather grim expression on his face. When he laughed, though, he didn't feel quite as ugly. Recently, he had stopped shaving his upper lip and let his mustache grow. It gave him a certain amount of dignity, in his opinion, and Emily didn't seem to mind. How she thought about things had taken on a lot of importance during the months he had spent on the Peabody farm. She came down from the porch to gather up the chunks of wood he had split.
Breakfast is ready. Come on inside and eat.
She didn't have to tell him twice, and she didn't have to help him up the steps. He made it just fine with the crutches. He had carved them himself, putting quite a bit of time and effort into it. He'd wanted the crutches to be as comfortable as possible, since it looked like he would be using them for quite a while. Some of the feeling had started to come back into his legs, enough that he could get around a little with the help of the crutches, but he was still pretty helpless. He didn't let himself think too much about how long that might go on. He still held out hope that one day his legs would work again, the way they were supposed to. Because of that, he'd asked Emily to help him exercise the muscles in them. He knew it wasn't fair to place that extra burden on her, but she didn't object. He had seen what happened to Clyde Monroe back home. Doing nothing after his injury had made him worse. Luke wasn't going to give up like that, which led right back to that stubbornness Emily had accused him of. He fed the chickens and gathered eggs and split wood and hoed the vegetable garden and shucked corn. Anything he could do. Anything he could do sitting down or balanced on one crutch, he would do. The work put thick slabs of muscle back on his arms and shoulders and back. He was damned if he was going to be useless. He would die first. Emily and her grandfather had both asked him if he wanted to send a letter to his family back in Missouri, letting them know he was alive. Luke only had to think about it for a second before he shook his head. After failing the Confederacy and his friends, he didn't want his pa and Kirby finding out about that day. One day, if what he planned came about, he would return home, but not until he had done the job he had set out for himself. Once his legs worked right again, he was going to track down Potter, Stratton, Richards, and Casey, and kill each and every one of them. He knew he probably wouldn't be able to recover the gold they had stolen. There was no Confederacy to return it to anyway, but at least he could even the score for what they had done to Remy, Dale, and Edgar, and to him. Then and only then, when he had reclaimed at least a vestige of his honor, would he return to his family. Until then, it was better to let them think he was dead, even though they would mourn him. It had to be that way. On his darkest nights, he admitted to himself there was a very strong possibility he would never walk normally again, no matter how much he tried. In that case, he would live out his life on the Peabody farm, unless Emily and her grandfather kicked him out. The way he and Emily had started to feel about each other, he didn't think that was likely. And yet that thought tortured him too. Emily might be falling in love with him. Lord knew he'd been in love with her pretty much from the moment he first saw her. But was it fair for him to saddle her with a cripple for a husband? He wasn't even sure he could be a real husband to her, although lately he'd begun to feel some stirrings that told him it might be possible. Feeling anything below the level of the wound in his back was a good sign. The bullet wound was completely healed. A pale, ragged scar was the only sign of it that remained. Luke hadn't seen the scar himself, of course, but Emily had described it for him. He could move around now without feeling even a twinge in his back. He clumped over to the table Emily had set for three people. Setting one of the crutches aside, he gripped his chair and lowered himself into it. Emily poured coffee for him and set a plate of flapjacks, bacon, and eggs in front of him. They ate fairly well, because the Peabody farm had escaped most of the damage and destruction inflicted by the Yankees when they rampaged through the area a year earlier.
Grandpa told me he's going into town today if you need anything.
The settlement of Dobieville was about 5 miles down the road. A trading post was closer to the farm, but Linus Peabody refused to do any business there since a Yankee carpetbagger had taken it over a month earlier when the previous owner had been unable to pay his taxes.
I can't think of anything, unless he can pick me up a new pair of legs.
I thought you promised to stop saying things like that. I know you think you got to walk again, Luke, and I don't blame you for feeling that way. I really don't. But you don't have to. Not for me, anyway. It ain't gonna change the way I feel about you.
Suddenly, the food in front of him didn't seem so appetizing. He didn't want to have this discussion. Of course, it was his own fault for bringing it up.
We don't need to talk about this. It won't change anything, anyway.
All right. Let's just eat.
Linus Peabody came in a few minutes later. He'd been in the barn, tending to the mules, the milk cow, and the hogs. If he sensed the tension between Luke and Emily, he had the good sense not to say anything about it as he sat down.
Did Emily tell you I'm going to town this morning, Luke?
She did, but there's nothing I need right now.
I was thinking you might want to go with me.
To Dobyville?
Yeah. Actually, I thought we all might go. Been stuck here on this farm all summer.
Luke glanced at Emily and caught a glimpse of excitement on her face.
I don't need nothing in town, Grandpa.
Yes, you do. You need to see somebody size a pair of ugly old galoots like me and Luke.
Neither of you is ugly.
There's no point in arguing with the facts. Neither of us is going to win any prizes for being good-looking, are we, Linus?
The judges would have to be plumb blind if we did. So it's settled. After we eat, we'll all load up in the wagon and head for town.
Luke had to have some help doing it, but he managed to climb into the back of the wagon. From there, he was able to use his arms to pull himself to the front, just behind the seat. Peabody settled down on the seat next to Emily to handle the team. Despite what the old man had said, Luke had a hunch there was more to this trip into Dobyville than Peabody let on. He didn't press the issue, though, as the wagon rolled across fields and along narrow, tree-shaded country lanes toward the settlement. It was a good test of how well his back actually had healed. The wagon wasn't in the greatest shape, and its ride was pretty rough, even on level ground. But he didn't feel any pain in his back, and that was encouraging. The mules didn't get in any hurry. The trip to town took more than an hour. Luke was tired by the time they got there, but he still wasn't hurting. Dobyville had a wide main street running for several blocks between businesses, along with a couple of side streets lined with houses. The steeples of the Baptist and Methodist churches stuck up above the trees on the edge of town. Some of the businesses had been burned when the Yankees came through, but Dobyville had gotten off with less destruction than many southern settlements. Several of the businesses that had been burned were being rebuilt, Luke saw, as Peabody sent the mules plodding along the street with the wagon rolling slowly behind them. But Luke sensed something was wrong, and after a moment he realized what it was. He noticed that they talked more like Yankees. The Yankees were rebuilding the businesses. Carpetbaggers. He had heard Peabody talking about greedy opportunists from up north swarming all over the south. He saw for himself what was going on. It wasn't just the carpenters. Men in derby hats and gaudy tweed suits and cocky grins strolled along the town's boardwalks, cigars clenched at jaunty angles in their teeth. All Luke had to do was look at them to know they were Yankees. The true citizens of Dobyville knew it, too. Luke saw the glances filled with resentment, anger, and fear the townsfolk cast toward the newcomers. Blue-uniformed soldiers lounged here and there. Yankee troopers stood in every block, not necessarily doing anything, but their mere presence was a bitter reminder that the Confederacy had been defeated and the southern states had been forced back into the Union at gunpoint after spilling rivers of blood. Peabody brought the wagon to a halt in front of Connolly's general store.
Going inside, gal. I'll join you in a minute.
What about Luke?
I'm all right sitting back here. It's too much trouble for the two of you to help me down and then back up again.
No, it's not. You came to town so you could see something different from the farm.
And so I can. I can see just fine from right where I am.
Oh, all right. But if you change your mind, we can get you out of there and you can use your crutches.
I know.
She still looked a little puzzled, but she hopped down from the wagon and went on into the general store.
I wanted a chance to talk to you while Emily ain't around, Luke.
I thought that might be the case. What's wrong, Linus?
What's wrong? Just look around you, son.
You talking about all the Yankees?
Soldiers and carpetbaggers alike. They've moved in like a swarm of locusts.
What did you expect? We lost the war. They can do whatever they want now.
They could treat us with some respect. Instead, they've just pulled their way in, run folks off, took over businesses. What you're looking at, son, is the beginning of something that may turn out to be even worse than the war itself.
I don't see how that could be possible.
You just hide and watch. Them Yankees got the idea they can waltz in, grab what they want for themselves, and grind the rest of the South into dust under their heels. And they'll laugh at us while they're doing it.
Why did you want to show me this?
Because there's going to come a time when we may have to fight for what's ours. So far, the Yankees ain't come anywhere near the farm, but one of these days they're liable to. And I don't intend to just let them take it away from me.
You didn't support the war. They should just leave you alone.
This ain't about the war anymore. It's about greed, pure and simple. And a chance for a bunch of no-good skunks to grab what ain't theirs.
And you want to know if I'll stand with you against them?
I'm just saying, you may have to make a choice. Legs or no legs.
You're right, Linus. I'm sorry. It's always best to know when trouble's coming.
That's what I thought.
And as for whether or not I'll be with you when that trouble comes, you ought to know the answer to that. You saved my life, you and Emily.
I know how you feel about her, too. I've seen the way she started looking at you lately. I ain't saying I like it, but...
I'm not exactly the man you had in mind for your granddaughter. I know that.
Maybe not. But you're a good man, Luke. I know that, too. Now I'm gonna go and help Emily pick up a few supplies. Sure you'll be all right out here?
I'll be all right.
Fair enough.
Peabody jumped down from the wagon and went inside the store. Luke looked around at the bustling settlement. If it hadn't been for the presence of the Yankees, he would have said Dobieville was well on its way to recovering from the war already. Unfortunately, under the surface, the truth was that Dobieville was well on its way to being gutted by the carpetbaggers. Peabody wanted to fight if the carpetbaggers came for his property, and he wanted Luke to fight with him. If it came down to that, Luke knew he wouldn't turn his back on the two people who had saved his life. But if that happened, there was a very good chance he and Peabody would wind up dead, leaving Emily alone and defenseless. Or else she would take up arms, and the Yankees would kill her too. As he mused, a couple of Yankee soldiers came along the boardwalk toward the general store. They stopped and propped their shoulders against one of the posts holding up the awning in front of the store. One of the troopers, a wiry little man with dark hair, glanced at Luke and then looked away, obviously uninterested in him. The taller, brawnier soldier, with bushy side whiskers and a thatch of straw-colored hair sticking out from under his forage cap, fastened a cool, appraising stare on Luke. Keeping an eye on them without drawing attention to himself, Luke tried to ignore them. A short time later, Emily and her grandfather came out of the store. She was carrying a crate of supplies, while Peabody had a bag of flour slung over his shoulder. As they moved to place the supplies in the back of the wagon, the big trooper straightened from his casual pose.
Hey, Reb! What kind of man sits by and lets a girl and an old geezer do all the work?
Who you calling an old geezer, sonny?
Emily put a hand on her grandfather's arm.
Just leave us alone, why don't you?
I wasn't talking to either of you. I was talking to that big, strapping specimen of southern manhood. But I guess he's like the rest of these Johnny Rebs, just a lazy coward.
Shut your mouth, you big, stupid Yankee tyrant!
The man's eyes widened in surprise. He brought his hand up to slap her.
Foul-mouthed little rebel slut!
Luke sent his crutch into the man's midsection. His companion acted swiftly, unsnapping the holster at his waist and pulling out a revolver. He eared back the hammer as he raised the gun and pointed it at Luke's face.
What's going on here?
The soldier's gaze darted past the wagon toward a man who had come along the street from the other direction. The short Yankee hesitated, licking his lips.
This Reb just attacked Private Packet, Mr. Woodford.
The newcomer strode past the wagon to confront the soldiers.
It looked to me more like he was defending this young woman. Packard was about to strike her, wasn't he?
Begging your pardon, sir, but you didn't hear what she called him.
Nor do I care. A man who acts like he's going to hit a lady deserves whatever he gets, and I'm confident Colonel Morrison would agree with me.
He used the walking stick he carried to point at the bigger soldier.
Now put that gun away. Help Private Packard to his feet, and both of you move along.
The little trooper reluctantly followed the civilian's orders. But Luke could tell he was afraid not to do what Wolford said. After a couple of seconds, the soldier holstered his revolver and turned to extend a hand to his companion.
Come on, Packard. We got things to do.
Packard brushed aside the other soldier's hand and climbed to his feet on his own.
This ain't any of your business, Wolford.
Come on, let it go.
The shorter man got hold of Packard's sleeve and tried to drag him away. Packard didn't want to, that much was clear. He glared darkly at Luke, who saw a promise in the man's eyes that the skirmish wasn't over. But the soldier turned and stalked off along the boardwalk, his shorter compatriot trying to keep up with him. Wolford turned to Luke, Emily, and Peabody.
I'm sorry about that unpleasantness. Unfortunately, too many soldiers haven't gotten it through their heads yet that the war is over.
He put out a hand to Peabody.
Vincent Wolford.
The man was about 40, with a lean face, dark hair, and thick salt and pepper side whiskers. His suit was a subdued blue, and he wore a black beaver hat. Wolford wasn't just a carpetbagger, Luke thought. He was a boss carpetbagger. Peabody hesitated, clearly not wanting to shake hands with any Yankee, but Wolford had kept the little soldier from shooting Luke. After a moment, he took Wolford's hand and clasped it briefly.
Linus Peabody?
It's a pleasure to meet you, Mr. Peabody. And this is your granddaughter, I expect? I can see the resemblance.
My name's Emily. I ain't much on shaking hands with Yankees, though.
Oh, that's all right, Miss Peabody. A perfectly understandable attitude, considering all the upheavals that have taken place. Believe me, I know what you're going through. Or perhaps it's not Miss Peabody. Are you the lady's husband, sir?
That's Luke.
Luke Smith. I'm a friend of the family, that's all.
I see.
Wolford glanced at Luke's legs and the crutch still in his hand.
You were wounded in the war?
That's right.
What a terrible shame.
Luke was aware that Emily and her grandfather were looking at him curiously, no doubt wondering why he had given Wolford a false name. Without much thought, it had popped out of his mouth. He'd been brooding a lot lately about the stolen gold and the deaths of his friends, and hated to think the name Jensen would ever be linked to such a shameful failure. That probably had something to do with it, and the fact he instinctively didn't trust Vincent Wolford.
Colonel Morrison, the commander of the troops in this area, is a good friend of mine. I'll have a word with him and ask if he could order his men to treat the citizens with a bit more respect. After all, we're all partners now in rebuilding the South. If we're going to work together, we should get along, shouldn't we?
We don't want trouble with anybody.
Of course not. Well, good day to you folks.
As Wolford strolled away, Peabody climbed quickly to the wagon seat.
Get on the wagon, girl. We're getting out of here.
The old-timer turned the vehicle around and got the mules headed back toward the farm. Emily turned around to lean over the back of the seat.
You shouldn't have gotten mixed up in that, Luke. That big, dumb Yankee never would have been able to hit me. I'm too fast for the likes of him.
Maybe so. But it's bad enough I had to sit by while you and Linus loaded the supplies. You can't expect me to do nothing while that soldier attacked you.
You almost got yourself killed, that's what you did.
Luke couldn't argue with that.
If that slick-talking Yankee carpetbagger hadn't come along, that mean little varmint would have mowed your head off.
More than likely.
And what was that business about calling yourself Smith? Have you been lying to us all along, son? Are you some sort of criminal on the run from the law?
No, absolutely not. I may not have told you quite everything, Linus, but I give you my word. Nobody's looking for me, lawman or otherwise.
I reckon I can accept that. Just like I can accept it's your business what you call yourself.
Well, it may take me some getting used to after calling you Jensen all this time. Just don't get yourself killed on account of me, Luke Smith, or Jensen, or whatever the hell name you want to use.
I'll certainly try not to.
When they got back to the farm, Emily and her grandfather helped Luke down from the wagon before they unloaded the supplies. He stood at the back of the vehicle on his crutches.
If you want to drape that flour sack over my shoulder, Linus, I might be able to carry it in.
Oh, there ain't no need of that. You don't have to prove anything to us, Luke.
That's right. You already do plenty to help out around...
The heavy crate slipped from her grasp and fell on Luke's right foot.
Hell and damnation! Oh, Luke, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to drop that on you. It must have...
Must have hurt. Only a little. That's one thing I don't have to worry about.
Looking flustered, Emily picked up the crate.
Well, when we get inside, I want to take a look at your foot anyway. You could be hurt and not even know it.
I suppose you're right.
A few minutes later, he was sitting in the rocking chair. Emily knelt in front of him and took off his boot and sock. There was a red mark on the top of his foot where the crate had landed, but no blood. Emily poked around on the spot.
Doesn't feel like any bones are broken. You were lucky.
That's me. Lucky Luke Smith.
After they ate a hasty midday meal, Emily and Peabody went out to work in the fields, leaving Luke sitting in the rocker. When he was sure they were gone, he put his hands on his thighs and squeezed as hard as he could, working the muscles. He had succeeded in covering up his reaction, so Emily and her grandfather hadn't noticed it, but it had hurt like blazes when that crate fell on his foot, the most sensation he had felt in one of his feet for a long time. And it had been repeated when Emily poked at the site of the injury. It excited him as no pain ever had. He stared at his legs, willing them with every fiber of his being to move, but all he could summon up were a few twitches. He slumped back in the rocking chair, exhausted. He told himself that might be the most his legs would ever move, but his heart soared inside him anyway. For the first time in months, he had real hope again. Hope that someday he might be able to have the things he most wanted. Emily and vengeance. Over the next few days, Luke struggled against the impatience he felt as he looked for another sign that his legs might be improving. Anytime he was alone at the cabin, he moved them as much as he could, sometimes unconsciously straining his other muscles until he was breathing hard and sweat popped out on his face. He rubbed his legs and then pounded on them in frustration when they failed to respond as much as he wanted them to. One day, he lifted himself up out of the chair with his crutches, then let them fall to the sides in the hope he could force himself to stand. He fell on his face. He struggled hard to push himself up with the crutches to get back in the chair. He didn't give up. He worked at it every day. He didn't say a word about his efforts to Emily or her grandfather. If he failed, again, he didn't want them to know about it. There would be time enough later to fill them in if he was successful in learning to walk again. Emily continued to exercise the muscles in his legs, massaging and working them back and forth. Several days after his fall, she noticed a change.
It may be my imagination, Luke, but it seems to me like your legs are getting stronger rather than weaker.
Really? Well, that's good, isn't it?
Yeah, real good. I knew it was just a matter of time before you started healing up.
He thought she was just trying to be encouraging, but maybe she was more right than she knew. Whenever Emily and her grandfather weren't around and Luke was on his crutches, he let more of the weight of his body rest on his legs. At first they had buckled, but as the days went on, he was able to stiffen them and partially support himself more than he could before. He still didn't say anything to Emily or her grandfather. Hope and resolve filled him, but he was wary. One evening while Emily was inside cleaning up after supper, Luke sat in the rocker on the porch and the old man sat on the steps. Peabody lifted his pipe and lit it.
I spotted some fellas on horseback watching the place today.
Soldiers?
No, I didn't get a very good look at them.
What do you reckon they wanted?
Don't know, but Bud Harkness came by today and talked to me. Bud's got the next farm over. He says there's some problem with the taxes and he might lose his place.
What? Didn't he pay them?
He did, but the judge the Yankees put in charge of such things says that Bud didn't pay enough. It's a blamed lie, but he's a judge.
What's this fellow Harkness gonna do?
What can he do? He can stay and fight, or he can leave. Bud's got 5 kids and another on the way. He can't afford to get himself killed.
So he's gonna pack up and leave?
Spec so. That's a smart thing to do.
If they're after his place...
This one's next in line. That's who I think was watching us today. Somebody who works for the varmint who's got his eye on this place.
You happen to know who that is?
Peabody turned his head to look at Luke in the fading light.
Wolford.
The answer didn't surprise Luke. Vincent Wolford had stepped in to help them that day in Dobieville when they had the trouble with the soldiers, but he had seen through the man's slick facade to the predator underneath.
Maybe Harkness has the right idea. There's Emily to think of.
You mean you think we should run, too? That ain't the way you sounded the last time we talked about this, son.
I know. I just don't want anything bad to happen to Emily.
You think I do? But you've got to remember this. Getting her to leave wouldn't be easy. This land, well, look at it this way. When her pa and her brothers went off to fight, they figured they were doing it to protect our home. This land. Emily still sees it the same way. She'll feel like she has to defend it too, just like they did.
Luke understood that. He felt the same way about the Jensen farm in Missouri. So would his pa and Kirby. There was no good answer. None at all. Emily appeared in the doorway behind them, drying her hands on a cloth.
What are the two of you talking about so serious-like?
Who says we're talking serious? I was just telling Luke a joke.
I didn't hear anybody laughing.
Oh, that's because I ain't got to the funny part yet. So, then the farmer says, "You're all mixed up, mister. That there's my prize hog."
Luke joined Linus, even though on the inside, he had seldom felt grimmer. Using the crutches, Luke lifted himself from the chair and stood beside the table. After a moment, he let go of the crutches, allowing them to fall to the sides like he had done before. He stood there with his hands spread, trying to balance himself. He didn't fall immediately. He felt the weight on his legs, felt the muscles struggling to support him, but they began to give out. He had to slap his palms down on the table to hold himself up. Even that was progress, he thought, as his pulse pounded in his head. He hadn't collapsed. Yes, he was leaning on the table, but he was still standing. Luke turned his head toward the door, and as he did so, his legs folded up underneath him. He tried to catch himself on the table, but wound up lying on the floor between the chair and the table. Emily came in and saw him there.
Damn it, Alt!
She stopped herself. She had been trying to stop cursing so much lately. She rushed over to him and bent to take hold of him.
Lord have mercy, Luke, what happened? How did you manage to fall?
Don't worry about that, just help me up.
He saw the quick flash of hurt in her eyes and wished he could call back the sharp words, but they were already out there.
Please, Emily.
As she lifted him, he reached up and grabbed hold of the table. With it to support him, she was able to get him back into the chair.
I'll pick up your crutches.
He held out a hand to stop her.
I can get them, thank you.
Were you trying to walk, Luke? I've told you, I don't care about that. Not for me. I want it for you, but it's not going to make any difference how I feel.
Of course it makes a difference. It's bound to.
No, I swear to you it doesn't. I'll prove it to you.
Before he could stop her, she lowered herself onto his lap, her arms clasped around his neck. Luke's arms went around her. She was such a little bit of a thing, yet the curves of her body were those of a woman. Her lips worked urgently against his, their taste sweet and hot. As he held her and kissed her, he felt something, no doubt about that. She did too. Pulling back slightly, her eyes widened. He was about to apologize, but a pleased glow sprang to life in her eyes.
See, Luke, I told you it didn't matter.
She kissed him again, then slid out of his arms and stood up.
Grandpa might be coming in any time, so we'll save our sparking for later.
Luke nodded. After everything Linus Peabody had done for him, he didn't want to offend the old-timer. Peabody hurried in a short time later, all right, as Emily had predicted. It quickly became obvious the last thing on his mind was who was sparking his granddaughter.
There's a buggy and some riders coming.
He reached for the rifle hanging on a wall near the door.
Yankee soldiers again?
Peabody shook his head as he checked to make sure the rifle was loaded.
Nope, it's that fellow Wolford. Unless I miss my guess, the men he's got with him are hired guns.
Get my revolver.
What are you thinking about doing? What are the both of you thinking about doing?
Nothing we don't have to. Could be Wolford just wants to talk. If he does, I'll listen to him. Won't do him any good, but I'll listen.
Is this about the folks who have been losing their farms to the carpetbaggers?
You know about that?
How the hell could I not know about it? It's the only thing folks all over this part of the country are talking about.
I need my revolver.
Luke looked intently at Emily until she went to the cabinet where the Griswold and Gunnison revolver was kept. She took it out and brought it over to Luke.
I can use this gun.
You need to stay inside.
Luke!
Luke's right. You stay in the house, girl, like you did when the Yankees came.
Man! You're the most stubborn critters on God's green earth!
Luke stuck the revolver in the pocket of his overalls and grasped his crutches.
That's because we're raised by women to be that way.
With a smile, he lifted himself to his feet. She still looked mad, but rested a hand on his arm for a second.
Don't start trouble with them.
I don't intend to start trouble with anybody.
He didn't say anything about finishing it, if things came down to that. He looked out through the door Peabody had left open.
Here they come.
Be careful. We just...
She didn't finish, but he knew what she meant. They had just admitted how they felt about each other. She didn't want him going and getting himself killed. Luke didn't want that either. He nodded to show her he understood as much. Peabody went out onto the porch, and Luke followed him. Vincent Wolford drove his buggy up to the cabin and brought the vehicle to a halt, reining in the two fine black horses pulling it. Luke found himself wondering who those horses used to belong to and how Wolford had gotten his hands on them. He was willing to bet the carpetbagger hadn't bought them fair and square. Three men on horseback accompanied Wolford. As they reined in, Luke studied them. Back home, he had seen Jayhawkers from Kansas on several occasions, and these men reminded him of those ruthless guerrillas. One wore a derby and a flashy eastern suit. One was big, with broad shoulders and a rough-hewn face dominated by a rusty handlebar mustache. His hands were huge, with knobby knuckles broken more than once in various brawls. He wasn't carrying a gun that was visible, but Luke figured there was probably a revolver in a shoulder holster under that tweed coat. The other two riders were dressed more like frontiersmen in boots, work clothes, and broad-brimmed hats. They wore their guns out in the open, carrying holstered pistols on their hips. They had rugged, hard-planed faces and cold eyes. Luke knew all three men were probably killers, paid by Vincent Wolford to enforce his will and help him take what he wanted. They would be fast on the draw. If Linus Peabody raised his rifle, one or more of the gunmen would drill him before he got a shot off. Luke was pretty handy with a gun, but he knew he wasn't a match for those three. Not with the Griswold and Gunnison stuck in his pocket. If he had a regular gun rig and a pair of revolvers, he might manage to down a couple, maybe all three. But they'd get let in him, too. It wasn't going to come to that. He couldn't allow the carpetbaggers to kill him and Peabody, leaving Emily at their mercy.
Take it easy. Stay calm.
The old man nodded, but the tense way he stood and the urgency with which he gripped the rifle told a different story. He was ready to fight. He wanted to fight. Luke levered himself forward on his crutches, putting himself between Peabody and the buggy. He nodded to Wolford.
Howdy. What brings you out here from town?
Mr. Smith, isn't it? I came to speak with Mr. Peabody there. I have a business proposition for him.
I ain't interested in doing business with the likes of you.
You should hear me out. That's just a smart rule of thumb. Always listen to the other fellow's proposal. You never know when he might offer something you want.
Peabody glared darkly at the visitors, but after a moment he nodded.
I'll listen. I don't reckon it's very likely you got anything I want, though.
You might be surprised. What I'm proposing, Mr. Peabody, is that I take this farm off your hands for a very reasonable price.
Why in blazes would I want to sell?
Well, the market for cotton, tobacco, and other crops is very depressed right now. You can't hope to make very much for them.
We'll get by.
Yes, perhaps. But you can do even better somewhere else. I hear people are having a phenomenal success migrating to the frontier. There are millions of acres out there just ripe for the taking.
This is my home. I've lived on this land all my life, and my pa lived here before me. I intend to stay until the good Lord calls me home.
You can do that, but you'd still be wise to sell out to me. If you don't want to leave, you can always stay and work the land on shares.
Why in the Sam Hill would I want to do that?
You wouldn't have all the worries of dealing with a new government. I'd handle all that. You could just work the land the way you always have.
Why, you rake in all the profits.
Not all of it. You'd still get by, as you put it. You don't seem to understand, Mr. Peabody, that things have changed around here. It's not the same as it was before the war, and it never will be again. Different people are running things now. I happen to be well acquainted with Colonel Morrison and Judge Blevins, and although I may be speaking out of turn here, I know they're going through all the records and uncovering a number of cases where insufficient taxes were paid on properties in this area?
You mean you're going to grab folks' land by claiming they owe taxes they really don't?
The big Eastern tough in the Derby glared and edged his horse forward.
Don't talk to Mr. Wolford like that, you old rebel.
Take it easy, Joe. I'm sure Mr. Peabody didn't mean to cast any aspersions.
What I cast is you off of my land. I paid my taxes and can't nobody say otherwise.
Yes, but you paid them to the Confederates, who were in charge here at the time. There's no way of knowing where all that money went, but it isn't in the county's coffers like it's supposed to be. Unfortunately, in order to fund the new government, a new taxation schedule will have to be put into place.
Why don't you call it what it is? Stealing, plain and simple!
I'm just trying to help. Isn't that your granddaughter I see just inside the door? Well, good day to you, Miss Peabody. You're looking as lovely as ever.
You leave Emily out of this.
She stepped onto the porch and confronted Wolford and his gunman, too.
We don't want your so-called help, mister. You better turn that buggy around and get off our land right now.
Or what? An old man and a cripple will run us off? I don't think so.
Please, Howell, there's no need for unpleasantness. I think if you just give me a chance, Miss Peabody, you and I could be good friends. If you were to help persuade your grandfather to be reasonable, why, I can see all sorts of benefits in it for you. A girl as beautiful as you should have some of the finer things in life. The sort of things a man like me could give you.
So I could be some sort of backwoods harlot for you? Give me that gun!
Luke saw the three hired killers grow tense in their saddles and knew the situation was teetering perilously close to violence. Under the circumstances, the outcome of that wouldn't be good for him and his friends. Luke moved between the Peabodys and the unwelcome visitors.
That's enough.
Do you speak for these people, Mr. Smith?
I speak for myself. And this is what I gotta say, Wolford. If there's trouble here today, you'll be sorry. I'll see to that personally.
Luke looked right into the man's eyes. He didn't like taking his attention off the others, but knew they wouldn't act unless Wolford ordered them to.
That's mighty big talk for a man on crutches.
Luke let go of the right-hand crutch, letting it fall behind him, and moved his hand so it wasn't far from the butt of the revolver sticking out of his pocket.
I only need one to balance on.
If any gunplay broke out, Luke was going to draw that revolver and kill Wolford, no matter what else happened. He might die, and Emily and her grandfather probably would too, but Wolford would die first. Reading the deadly message in Luke's steady gaze, fear flared in the carpetbagger's eyes. An instant later, it was replaced by smoldering anger.
All right. I was just trying to be generous. I thought perhaps we could consider ourselves friends and neighbors, Mr. Peabody. But if you'd rather this unreconstructed rebel speak for you...
Smith's right. We've heard enough. You and your boys need to get...
Wolford lifted the reins.
We'll be going, then. Perhaps I was wrong, Mr. Peabody. Perhaps you won't lose your farm. But don't count on it.
With that, he turned the team and sent the buggy rolling away from the cabin. The three gunmen lingered a moment, giving Luke hard, murderous stares before they wheeled their horses and followed Wolford.
I ain't counting on nothing, except that this trouble ain't over.
Luke knew the old-timer was right about that.